Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Wizards, Warriors and Words, a fantasy writing advice podcast. This is the second part of our discussion with Will White. If you haven't listened to the first part, go back and check that out. I'm joined by my co-hosts, starting with Rob.
Hello, I'm Rob J. Hayes, author of, I'm going to go with this one, and I'm not going to tell you which book it is, but look.
No one escapes the pit.
No one escapes the pit.
Along the razor's edge, spoilers.
Oh, you spoiled
it. Ruined it.
Mike.
Oh, wait, Jesus. Hi. Michael R. Fletcher, author of Beyond Redemption.
Blackstone Heart.
Fuck, whatever, yeah. But, oh, and that one. That one, I love that cover.
Ghosts of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And Dirk Ashton.
I am Dirk Ashton, author of Ghosts of Tomorrow.
Oh, shit.
And the Paternus Trilogy and the Cradle series and Never Die.
And we are joined by the life model decoy of Will White, here to come out of his writing cave and talk to us about all things Cradle and writing. Will, thank you for jumping back on the show.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, I am definitely the real Will White, 100%.
Yep.
And I'm here with the book that I definitely wrote, Paternus.
And I'm, that's the only reason it's any good.
I've changed hats. So yeah, we're all ready to go.
That's right. It's definitely been a week in real life.
I'm dying to know what that picture is in the back.
Oh, it's it's fan art of Cradle. These are the two main characters.
Oh wow. Ooh,
nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to not get the glare. But the
angle, that's here. Awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It was good. It was really good. So another fan slash cohort of ours got that printed and framed for us and sent it to me, so I keep it up on my bedroom wall. Yeah,
nice.
That was not that, obviously. Can you see the rest of the wall is completely blank, so that was not arranged for this thing. I just keep it up there. So I need to get more. I need to do what you guys have and keep like all my books up there so that I have a good podcast background. But
see, now I feel better. New York Times bestselling author Will White records interview in his bedroom. I am also in my bedroom.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, so is Jed. We've seen this before. Jed looks like he's really professional, and then if he turns the camera, it's a mess.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what's off camera.
That's what's really going on in the background. But on this it looks all.
That was actually his bed. That little orange thing that we saw.
He just sort of curls up there.
Yeah, that's it. Like a cat. Just in that little box there. On the topic of fan art, do you remember when you first received or saw fan art of your books and what your reaction was to that? Because I imagine that would have been a pretty cool moment.
I do, actually. Yeah. I honestly was about to say no. I just assumed that I wouldn't, but I do. So the first fan art I remember getting, and I think there may have been, I can't swear to you that this was the very first piece of fan art I received, but there was a Traveler's Gate fan art of the main character, and it was all done. And I actually think it's still the banner, or was the, no, it's not anymore, but it was the banner of the subreddit for a long time. But it's in blue and black tones, and it was the main character with his mask on and his giant sword off to the side. And I was like, that's really cool. And it was like this really harsh style. And I was like, wow, somebody actually drew something. And then the other one that was very early that really stayed with me was somebody who, it was like the brother's family of a friend I had growing up. So somebody I technically knew in real life, but distantly. And it was their 7-year-old kid with a cardboard tube sword and the thing tied around their neck, like a cape with their head up like a cloak, playing House of Blades in their house.
Wow.
That is so
cosplay. Yeah. That's next level.
Yeah. I was like, man, cosplayer.
Yep.
You've made it. The New York
Times. That's right. Like cosplay is when people get tattoos of like your artwork or your length, your words on your arm. Words. Yeah, I'm an author.
Yeah, I didn't get the first fan art I ever got was actually just like late last year, but it was Felix Ortiz and Stas Barodin. So I was just like, they just post it. You know, you just go to Facebook and you
see
it.
Wow.
I almost fell out of the chair, but there was, there have been two people have gotten tattoos fairly early on. Whoa. Which is crazy.
I've had some people get tattoos of mine, and my brother over there off screen has the second book of the Cradle series, Soulsmith, is dedicated to him. So he got a picture of the logo on the cover. He's on his arm. You want to stick your arm right here?
Yeah, let's see.
Dragon Time.
Yes. Nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
That is cool.
It'd be better on your forehead, but
yeah. Yeah, lack of commitment there. Real lack of commitment. Yeah,
he's not that proud.
Visible face. Will, I'd love to talk more about kind of your writing process and marketing in this episode. So maybe to kick things off, what do your writing process look like? Are you an outliner? Are you a bit more of a fly by the seat of your pants kind of guy? What's your approach to
story? You know, I love outlines, and for so long that was all I wrote. And so I think of myself as an outline person, but the problem is that whenever I get started, it just kind of the outline loses its power over me. Mm-hmm. So I do outline and do all my background as much as possible. And the problem is that as I get working, I re-outline, replan, and recon. So it's
exactly what I do.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's no part of my outline was correct from the very beginning, but it's every new one is correct for this next part of the book that I'm working on. So I don't know where to call that. People are like, are you a planner or a pantser? I don't know. I plan on the seat of my pants. So
a replanner.
A replanner. That's right. That's
yeah. I can't. I get total brain block if I don't have an outline. I need to have some idea where I'm going, but I leave it open so that I could stop when I see it going off the rails. I can stop and take a day or two and re-outline, and then I can dive back in. And I'll have to do that 3, 4, maybe 5 times per book.
That's exactly what I do. Yeah. So that's my writing process. And then I work really well with blocks of time. So what I usually do, rather than, I don't do anything scheduled. I'm just not a very regimented person. So I've tried to do the, you know, you wake up at a certain time and you write till it's, you know, you wake up at, it gets started at 8 and you write until noon and then you take a break and then you, I don't do anything like that. So what I learned eventually was if I lock myself away for 3 days or more at a time, 3 days to 2 weeks is the maximum. Or a cruise. That's what I do sometimes.
I know.
So if I lock myself away, so I have nothing else to do for that block of time, and I just write basically. So every time I'm awake, I'm writing. I need a break, I take a break, but then I'm coming right back to writing. When I do that, I'm a lot more productive. So that's what I do. So I tend to write my books that way in chunks, and just hammer out most of the book in a couple of weeks.
Wow, that's amazing.
So you're sort of a binge writer in a sense of. Interesting. I don't think we've
had anyone on the show. I know Galley writes that way too.
Oh, really?
He's a binge writer. Yeah.
Well, speaking of galleys.
Speaking of galleys.
Yeah. Speaking of galleys, one of the ways that I used to, before the COVID times, one of the ways I used to get away and get isolated was I live in Florida. So we would get whatever cheap cruises we could find. and I would just go on that and lock myself away in a cruise ship and write.
That's because great.
It was a really great isolation. There's no phone service. And you just kind of, if you need to go eat, you go grab food, come right back, keep working. Yep. You need to reset up in a new place because you need to change the scenery. Fine. There's plenty of places on the ship to write. Yep. So, and I didn't know anybody there. So I don't have anything to do but write. So that's what I did.
Yeah, that's ideal. Right, sounds ideal to me.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it was really neat.
I'm going to try that. So has the past year with COVID has kind of screwed that up for you though.
Yeah. So what we did there was we tried to find, we did some research around here and tried to find empty condos or cabins away from people or places where I could go that were by myself. So that were cheap and there was enough cheap. Nobody was coming to Orlando tourist wise. So the whole place shut down. So a lot of these condos and places were open where they would normally be to vacationers and they were cheaper. So I could go and just lock myself in there instead of locking myself in my house and write.
Nice.
Sweet.
Nice.
So once you
love that mug.
Ah, thank you.
Is it a Cradle mug?
It's another Cradle mug. Yeah. It's for the latest book.
Oh, Bloodline.
The one that hit the audio hit the New York Times. So that's
it's nice.
That's the way forwards.
Does it taste like success every time you take a sip?
That's right. What's the way forwards, Rod? I missed part of that.
Just merchandising. It's the way forward.
Oh, yeah.
We've all got to get on that.
That's the way. Yeah.
I've got to get my store up. Store up with t-shirts and stuff early on, but I didn't have enough of a following. So I just pulled the whole thing down. I'm going to rebuild it.
I'm going to be honest. We don't make any money on the merch.
I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, it's just to offer fans who want some. It's not
Mostly I want to do it just to do signed books because I do get a lot of.
Wait, I don't want to see Rob's. Is that a bookmark?
This is a leather bookmark, right? And
leather.
Nice. I got this made up the other day just because I found a website that did leather bookmarks and just thought, that's awesome. I got my own done. Posted it on Facebook and I immediately had a bunch of people being like, I want that. And I was like, you don't want to know how expensive it was.
But you know, for a leather bookmark, people would pay.
Yeah, that's just it. Like when I did actually say how expensive it was, people were still just like, I pay it. I want, it's that cool. For me, I just thought like, why would you pay that? I mean, for me, this means something because it's like, artwork of one of my characters, but other people paying like 15 quid for a bookmark of my artwork just seems
I would. if it's books I like, I would pay that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, it's surprising what happens when you write a really good book. People tend to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, when he gets
paid. No, I get Dirk to write them.
That's true. Outsource them. Smart. So, Will, you've mentioned that you have a bit of a team that helps you out. I'm curious at how you kind of, manage all of that and like how that benefits you in your level of focus or writing or whatever. And I guess from that, like what roles you still do yourself versus like what things you find more efficient to kind of outsource to other people.
He writes and drinks coffee.
That's right. That's it. That's the extent of my responsibilities now. So the idea was, at a high level from the very beginning, the whole idea was you just don't get a whole lot done by yourself. So
it's so hard.
Exactly. So one of the things that we realized was there's a lot of accountability to a lot of professions that people don't even realize is there. So you're accountable to your coworkers, you're accountable to your clients, you're accountable to whoever. But in what we do, there's a lot where technically long term you're accountable to your fans, right? Mm-hmm. But short term you're not accountable to anybody. So it's just, I don't get a lot done unless I build that accountability in. So from at a broad level, I was just like, I need people to keep me from flying completely off the rails. I need people to help me finish a book. I can't do anything by myself, man. So it's what I try to emphasize is in a lot of ways that are hard to quantify, it's really important to have people in your corner. Even if they don't have a particular job or role or anything, just helping out. That was something that has been really, that I'm really passionate about and has been real key for me.
Part of the problem, like when we're doing it all by ourselves, the advertising, the marketing, the social media, keeping up the website and all that kind of stuff, is that in my case in particular, all of it gets done, either doesn't get done or it gets done half-assed. It's never done. None of it other than finishing the books ever gets done right. And even at that point, sometimes they're terrifically rushed and I need to make corrections and stuff.
So what I think people, miss sometimes is, so of course, obviously in the beginning, I'm wearing all those hats as well, but it's finding somebody to do that. So it's like, okay, well, obviously I can't do the covers myself. So we've got to find somebody to do the covers. Well, am I going to be the only one hunting the covers? No, I mean, I was getting friends and family to tell people they know. And then we were looking for graphic designers and we were Googling people and we were going to UCF to see if there was anybody in the art department who might be able to help. We had no money. So there was all of this that was even just finding somebody to do this or asking people what should I talk about on the blog? What should the website look like? There was a lot of this that they go, okay, so when did they take over in helping you? I don't know, man. They were just, it's my friends and family were part of this from the beginning. They were helping me out however they could. So that was a big part of it, was just the stuff people don't think about that somebody's got to do. And slowly what happened as the books continued to succeed and we brought people on in an official capacity. And so that's really where, and as we did that, then we started taking things off of me, with the ultimate goal being all I have to deal with is the stuff that only I can do. So, and we've really only had that set up basically now. It hasn't been long that we've gotten there. So that's been exciting.
Yeah. 'Cause I find it very interesting how, particularly recently, right? So you have Bloodline comes out. It's like number one on Amazon for a couple of days. It's on the New York Times bestseller list. But in the months leading up to it, you were on vacation. Is that right?
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I took a sabbatical for 3 months. Yeah. That was not something I ever thought I'd be able to do.
Did you write it while you were on holiday or was it written beforehand?
Wait, what, Rob?
Did you write it while you were on holiday or was it written beforehand?
It was written beforehand. I did no writing. Well, no work writing while I was away. Yeah, it's been a great, fantastic 8 years, but it's also been a lot of work. So we've gotten 18 books out. So I was like, look, these last few books have been harder and harder to write because of burnout, and just I never took any time to slow down. So what I did, I decided, I was like, look, we really know that I needed a break, and we've been trying to get that going for about a year now. And so I finally got one. And so we took 3 months off, and it was honestly the hardest thing I did during that 3 months was figure out what's the most effective and complete way to be totally disconnected and off and restored. And that was hard. Honestly, I didn't realize how long it would take me to stop thinking about the books and thinking about the next books and thinking about potential books and thinking about, it took me 5 or 6 weeks to keep calm that down. And so the long block of time was really very helpful.
That's interesting.
Has it helped since you've come back? Have you been more productive again? Is the burnout sort of eased?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It feels very different. The people close to me have said I am acting completely different. So that's good.
You seem very cheery and healthy.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's all a facade. it's felt a lot better. But one of the things when I came back and I did my first week of writing, I said, wow, this is still hard work. What did you think it was going to be? I was like, no, I mean, I didn't forget, but at the same time, I was like, I hope most of this is burnout. It wasn't. Most of it is just writing a book is hard. But not doing it without the burnout is just that extra little Yoda on your back.
So it's very interesting to me that you have been able to achieve that. And it's awesome that it had that effect of combating that burnout. Cause I think Rob and Fletcher, you've talked a little bit about this before, like having had a realization where you needed to take a bit of time to step away from it for you guys as well. And then I'd be curious to get back to Will. What made it effective when you were taking those breaks? Like, what were the things that helped you kind of disconnect and kind of recenter yourself when you were going through those?
Yeah, for me, it was really just reading other people's stuff. Like when I'm writing, I basically stop reading. I can't read while I'm in the writing process. jumping into a bunch of nonfiction first, kind of to break my brain from fantasy for a while, and then finding the right couple of fantasy books to dive into. And, you know, it was weird. It was refreshing. Now, it wasn't 3 months. I think I gave myself 20 minutes, but those were really great 20 minutes.
Read 8 books.
In 20 minutes. One book every 3 minutes. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, well, I mean, I had it earlier this year where I just felt absolutely burned out. And like, my missus actually said to me, like, you need to take time off. You're about ready to just fall over and die. So I only took 2 weeks off. But yeah, basically I switched off by reading different books. So I mostly write fantasy. So I picked up some sci-fi books. I was reading like The Expanse, and you know, they're fairly big books, and I was getting through one a week, which is pretty damn good for me. So it was like between that and playing computer games, but ones that don't really require, that are more sort of mechanical. Like there's one called Slay the Spire, which I really quite like, which is like a card game, a roguelike card game.
I love Slay the Spire.
It's brilliant.
Played Monster Train, it's also really good.
Yes, that is my current love, actually. Playing it all the time. It's great to just switch my brain off, because once you know how it works, you don't have to like really go into the mechanics of it. Your brain just does it automatically, and just, you know, you stop thinking completely. It's wonderful.
Will, what for you enabled you to really disconnect? Because you said it took you a couple of weeks to get to that point where you were able to relax. Was there any particular things that really helped that happen? Was there any habits or anything that got you into that state where you were able to disconnect?
Lots of whiskey.
It was just, I don't remember half of it really what it was. No, it was the restrictions on what I was allowed to do. So I had these sort of self-imposed restrictions that I needed people to help me with. So I had to completely shut down social media. Just had to, I needed to, but other people handle it now, but I needed to completely disconnect from social media. At first I thought, okay, well, I won't do the official social media stuff, but I can do some stuff on my own. Nope, that was too much. And so then I was like, okay, well, I can at least do my private social media and check it, but I can't do it. Nope, couldn't do that.
Yep.
So I had to completely shut away from that. That was a big part. And then it was at first, for the first 4 to 6 weeks, it was just, I was just dead, man. I was sitting there playing Slay the Spire. Or watching YouTube videos or whatever. I was just dead. And then after that, the question was, okay, so now how do you go from, now that you're not at zero anymore, how do you then get into the black? How do we build up credit? And it was kind of a touch and go sort of feel your way through it situation. Still quarantine was still going on. So it was a lot of stuff. Okay, there's a lot of stuff I would try or go do if I could, but instead, so I was finding isolated cabins and that kind of thing and going and staying there and doing a lot of hiking. And so it was really trying to, however, I also, and I didn't make a specific point of this, I just sort of did it, but I did read a lot. So that did help too. So I read a little more than half of The Wandering Inn, which is basically like
that's a lot. Half of it is a lot.
Yeah. So we did that. So I did that. That was for the last month. And then before that, I read a lot of manga. I got a whole printed collector's box set of One Piece and Dragon Ball. I read through all those.
Oh yeah.
So that was fun. Yeah.
Nice. See, I'm a little disappointed. I missed the days. Fletcher's the only one I know who still just goes with the old fashioned booze, cocaine, and hookers. And clean cut these days.
Nah, you gotta cause trouble. That's the only way you can write. You know, you have to live somewhat you're writing about, and if that's a little self destructive, then what you gotta do? You gotta pay the
so
price.
Be it. You gotta suffer.
Fletcher is a rock star. Let's be fair.
Got to suffer
Fletcher
for your
is the
craft.
Rock star of this group. Let's be real. He actually made our theme music for the show. You can remember that every time our opening sting is playing. That is Fletcher on the metal guitar, rocking out.
All right.
Yeah,
I forget we have an opening theme because we never hear it on the
recording.
Yeah, it's a added in post thing. Not always on the YouTube, but usually on the audio. So we've got about 8 minutes or so before we need to wrap this conversation up. So
can I ask two really quick things?
Yeah, for sure.
For folks who are new to Will's stuff, Will, how many books are out right now in Cradle?
Cradle has 9 books right now.
And how many do you plan?
12. So 12. What I'm doing right now, this is actually what I was doing this week, is I'm planning the next 3 books together collectively. So I'm treating them like they're a trilogy. They're of course not, because there's 9 other books, but that's how I'm planning them out.
You're getting close, man.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
One other question. Dragon Con this year?
I'm planning on it. I actually had a scheduling conversation about it last.
We got a room. So.
Oh, hey, that's exciting. Yeah.
And we're buying your dinner this year.
Oh, all right. I'm looking forward to it.
T10 a possibility? The other little get together?
I don't know. It's the timing thing, and it's a
Dragon Con
right now. Yeah, I think that's far enough away.
Okay. Cool. All right, Jed. Back to Jed. Sorry.
Oh, all good. I know this is way too big a topic to tackle in the remaining 7 minutes that we have, but I was just wondering really briefly if you could kind of outline what your marketing process looks like and the things that have been most effective and waste, or by contrast, the things that have been waste of time over the years. To preface that, you could maybe, if you don't mind sharing, let us know how many Cradle books have been sold in total, because I imagine it's up there somewhere.
It's a lot. I don't know it off the top of my head.
Okay. 1 million.
I don't know. That's not me being secretive. I'm not sure. It's whatever I said would be wrong. But let's see. So fortunately, I have a quick answer to the marketing thing, which is I'm not good at marketing. I've never believed a whole lot in marketing. So I don't do a whole lot of marketing. So what I do that is the stuff that I do that's replicable and I know gets consistent results are just putting the first books in your series up for free. If you're in Kindle Select, then you can do that. Putting your book for free for a while, that always drums up interest in the rest of the series. So that gets people talking about it. It gets the wheels turning. That I've always seen positive feedback from that. And then releasing a sequel.
Mm-hmm. Now the period when you put that up for free, how long before the release of the next book do you do that, and how long do you run that?
We've been playing with that. We've tried kind of every combination. So if there's not another book in the series coming out, we will just occasionally put the first book up for free, just to, you know, why not?
Right.
And if there is another book coming out, we try to do it so that the first book in the series is free right before the next book comes out and through the release.
By right before, you mean 3 days, a week, 2 weeks?
I mean like a day or two, because you can only you're only allowed to put it up for free for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
So if you've got 3 days, you put it up a day before, and then so the day of the release and the day after, it's free, right? Cool. That kind of thing. But we've tried other things. We've tried making it go free as the next book comes out. We've tried doing it leading up to the release. We've tried, and it's like, they all kind of work. I don't know which one's a little bit better than the other. I don't know. So that's sort of what we try to think of is what do people like the most? Yeah. And it seems to be, if it's going up just a little, where it covers the release a little bit before, a little bit after, that seems to be what people enjoy the most. So I don't know what, in terms of results, I don't know what's the best.
Well, I recall that really, really bold move you guys decided to do for book 8 for the release, and you put all the previous 7 books up.
Yeah, so we've made
that's crazy, and that was a big risk, but it worked out, right?
It did. But we've made 2 really bold moves in terms of giving stuff away for free. One of them was we gave for July 4th 2 years ago, 2019. Yeah, we gave all of my books away for free, just all of them, not leading up to a release. We just kind of did it. So we just made all our books free. That was sort of a complete gamble. So we were going, okay, what we think is this is going to be fun. It's just going to be a fun event that people are going to like, and they're going to talk about it, and fans are going to be really happy, and people are going to, we just thought it'd be cool. But we really were going, how much money are we going to lose on this? So that was we were calculating, okay, how much money are we going to lose? We're projecting this to impact sales for the next 2-3 months. And we were going, can we afford to lose that much money? And we've said, I think we can. We got the next book coming out shortly after. Let's try it. And we did it. And as far as we can tell, we didn't lose any money. So
you make it up for people that aren't familiar. Since Will is in Kindle Unlimited, KU, very often you can make up that loss in just KU reads because you still get paid for those, even if the ebook is free.
Yeah, we found, which we did not expect, but we found that a lot of people, when the book is, you can get it for free to own. A lot of people still just read it in Kindle Unlimited because to them it's the same. So we get paid for the Kindle Unlimited reads. The cut doesn't cost them any money.
Yeah, and if the book's free, then it gets a lot more awareness on Amazon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So more people who may not have seen it see it on KU.
So we see that. We saw that. And then when the giveaways ended, the books either went right back to normal regular sales rates or some of them were a little higher. So we lost a little bit, but it was like we ended up basically even before we gave all the books away, which was crazy. So that was way better than we thought it was going to do. And then, of course, you get the positive press of having given a bunch of books away, and people are happy. People got the books. So that was really our motivation for doing it. Is we thought people would enjoy it. It'd be a cool event. And so then for this latest book coming out, or for I don't remember which book it was for, but for the one of the Cradle releases, we gave away all the previous books in the Cradle series. And that was another one where we were like, look, we think people are going to like this. We think people are going to come out of nowhere. New readers who are in the middle of the series are going to get a bunch of these books for free. And they're just going to own them for free before the next book comes out. And we thought, hey, that'd be a cool thing to do for them and that they're going to enjoy it. Are we going to lose money on this? Who knows? Maybe. And it turns out, I mean, not really. So we get more and more confident in if you're doing something that people like, it doesn't hurt you. So
awesome.
Yeah. All right. And it also proves there are still more readers, no matter how many.
That's the other thing is we kept thinking we were going to hit some sort of cap in readership, and that hasn't happened. So
nice.
I don't think it's ever going to happen. I mean, I think like I realized that when I saw Rhythm of War, like 5 months before its release or something, it was number one in like the entire store.
Yeah,
and it was there for like a few months or a few weeks, and then like when it released, it was number one again. I was like, I'm never going to see the bottom. I mean, Sanderson might, I won't.
Yeah, if Sanderson and White can't, then
I appreciate being put on that category, but that's not exactly accurate.
I do.
All right. Well, I think this is a good time to wrap it up. Just one quick last question before we go. Will, if you had to give advice to an author who's just starting out today, maybe they're getting ready to publish their first book, or maybe they're writing their first book, what advice would you give that person?
Don't do it alone and write a really good book.
Excellent. Awesome. All right.
Well, write the book that you want to read, right, Will?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because that's what you did too. Yep.
100%.
Sweet. You specifically must write the book that Will White wants to read. You can't write the book that you want to read.
Write the book that I want to read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
everyone write the book.
Awesome. No, this has been really cool. Thank you so much for coming on, Will. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of Cradle after our conversation. So it is extra special to have chatted with you. Thank you everybody for listening. If you want to support the show, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/wizardswarriorswords. And you can get a whole bunch of good perks on there, like advanced reader copies of our new books when they're coming out and some other cool tidbits. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And Will, thank you so much again for coming on.
Yeah.
Well, guys, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe for new episodes every single Monday. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.